I'm Pastor John Haug, Director of Congregational Life, and you're listening to Living Stories, St. John's Podcast. With this podcast, we at St. John's hope to take the opportunity to explore and learn how others choose to live God's love in the world. Our guest today is St. John's member Scott Moeller. This time's a busy month for Scott as he prepares for Sunday school to start this Sunday, September 8th. He's a teacher in there, and he's currently organizing our annual Oktoberfest potluck, which takes place Saturday, September 21st from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's actually really fun to have you here on this podcast. I know you a bit, and I think it's going to be fun for others to get to know your story, and I'm even going to learn some things, too. So let's talk about Scott Moeller. Where did you grow up? Where in the world did that happen?
So I grew up in Illinois, in the Midwest, mostly around Chicago. We lived up in the northern suburbs, moved down to Champaign-Urbana while my dad was in college for a few years, and then back up close to where we started, in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. I lived there until graduated high school.
Okay, so can we pick up a little Chicago accent if we get the right words out of you? Or
Chicago accents are complicated. There's a lot of them. There's more than one. I'm not going to have that Bears going. That's not the neighborhood I grew up in.
Actually, I've seen you wear Bears stuff, and my dad grew up in Illinois, so that's something we have in common. Did you grow up loving like Jim McMahon, Walter Payton, those are some of the names?
I grew up
Refrigerator Perry.
I grew up watching my mother, or learning from my mother, to scream run at the television set.
Yes.
Because clearly Walter Payton needed to be told to do that.
Yeah, yes. Sweetness. Awesome. So you grew up there. What was some of your earliest memories about church or religion? Was your family into church?
Did you
encounter God?
We were complicated.
Yeah.
My mother grew up Catholic.
Okay.
Her parents were a mixed marriage. Her mother was Irish Catholic. Her father was German Lutheran.
Okay.
And in order to get married, he had to promise that all the kids would get raised Catholic.
Right.
So he apparently went to church every week and sat in the parking lot.
Interesting.
For Mass. But apparently was friends and would play cards with all the nuns and all the priests. So
he's taking his stand on Sunday worship, but you know, this mix of real people with real people and connecting.
Exactly. Yeah. And so my mother grew up pretty rigorous Vatican I Catholic.
Okay.
And then a lot of Catholic schooling until high school. Then she and my father got married, and the first three kids were baptized Catholic. But growing up, I started going to the Catholic church with my mother. Now, my father, his family had been complicated background also. He was brought up Methodist, but his mother had grown up Christian Scientist. His father had grown up in a town that originally was founded to have no churches, Liberal, Missouri. But they had churches by the time he was growing up.
Okay.
And so he grew up Methodist. And then when I was little, we would go to the Catholic church 1 week, the Methodist church the other. Well,
okay.
I would go to you alternate. My parents would go to their own churches.
And tell folks, how many siblings do you have?
So I have two brothers and one sister.
And
so there's four of us total. I am the oldest.
You're the oldest. Okay. And so you're kind of early on, since you're the only one at the start, you're going between Methodist and Catholic churches.
Right.
And how does that impact your sense of the holy in God early on?
It was pretty early. So I remember going to both. Yeah. I remember sitting there. It's vastly different.
They're very different service styles.
It's a very different. I mean, I think most people church here would kind of recognize the Catholic style, but the Methodist style is much more relaxed, the right word.
Okay.
It's just a very more, very much less formal type of setting. Even though it still contains all the same pieces and parts, you just sometimes a little hard to recognize in between the two forms. But we only did that until I was about five. When I was in kindergarten, my parents met some friends in the apartment complex we lived in. They had some daughters. One was a year younger than me, another one a little bit younger than that, closer to my brother's age. and they were going to a Presbyterian church. Okay. So my parents checked it out, and poof, we were Presbyterian.
Poof. You have friends that are gone, and it's kind of connects.
Yeah, so it's really kind of the friends that brought them into the Presbyterian church there.
Was that some of, when you think to like a youth group experience or being with kind of kids in church, was that a place where you found that?
No, we did not have a lot of kids at that church. So it was a church that was out in the cornfields.
Okay.
So it was Ricklepick.
Did you like church? Did you feel drawn to God in church, or what was that like?
As a kid, being in church was okay. Mm-hmm. Going to the service was okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy Sunday school that much, often because I was the only kid there.
Okay.
So it'd be me and an adult doing things. And now that I'm a Sunday school teacher, I can appreciate much more how difficult that task would be, especially with me as a child in there. And so I would, you know, if I could avoid it anyway, I'd be much like my daughter is now.
So how do you go from someone who's early experiences like maybe I don't want to be in Sunday school to becoming a Sunday school teacher? And why is that important to you now? Because you've told me about that a bit, but when did that start for you at St. John's, and tell me about being a teacher here for you?
So it started for me at St. John's because I was directly asked by Jennifer Johnson in her sort of way that doesn't know her, I guess technically no was an option.
but she was very, she could sort of encourage you to do things.
It's just phrased in a way where you kind of have to say yes, because it's just such a reasonable, small, little request that you can really help here and make a difference.
Yes.
And so she asked me to help out with the fifth and sixth grade class. And I came in, and they'd been having some difficulties with the class, especially with some of the boys were rambunctious.
Yeah, fifth and sixth would be an energetic zone for sure.
Yeah, so she was looking for someone to help calm that down, or at least be able to put a lid on it, or go for help if needed.
Okay,
go find parents. So I came in and helped with that for a year, and then they asked me to take over after Lou's left. And so I took over the fifth and sixth grade class, but I did not want to teach the curriculum they had because it reminded me a lot of what I had growing up.
Okay.
And it was unexciting, uninspiring, not overly connected. I wasn't learning anything. It kind of felt like you were treating sixth graders like second graders.
So I want to tell folks at home, my impression of you, Scott, is you are a really, really intelligent person, and bringing your brain to church matters to you. You're not the kind of person that could go to a church where you're sort of asked to not bring your whole self and your intellect to. And I sense in the classroom when I've sat in, you want the same thing for youth, that they don't have to pretend that they, you know, have to believe things a certain way, that they could bring really all their reasoning and their hearts to Bible study and learning. And so you found a curriculum that was kind of able to do that a bit more.
Yeah. So Jennifer did some poking around and found one that fit well. It really kind of, it's called Connections. And what it really did was brought Old Testament and New Testament and kind of put them together, and then also talked about what else is going on in the world out there. You know, this isn't happening. This isn't just you know, the entire world right here. There's other things in other places going on. So
how is this related to the world now and maybe your life now?
Well, even to the world back then.
Okay.
So, you know, when you talk about, you know, the exile in Babylon, what else is going on in the world there? What's happening in Egypt? What's happening in Greece? What's, you know, why are the Persians so important? How does this all kind of connect in? These timing, you learn about these things in other places and it never quite fits in. And then you can start to piece together, oh, these things in the Bible are happening at this time.
Interesting.
You know, by the time we saw this, you know, by the time this happens, the pyramids are ancient already. They're, you know, it's something that was just there that people kind of looked at and went, whoa. You know, the Greeks had their whole civilization going. They were You know,
so it's a historical context.
Right. You know, what's been going on in China? What's going on in the Americas? What are all these different things happening? So it kind of starts to bring this, takes it from being some mystical book that you only talk about on Sundays to a, oh, no, this has things in it that fit in place.
Cool.
And you can start to bring other pieces together with it.
Very cool. You've been teaching how many years?
It's a good question.
It's more than five.
Six, maybe?
Six or so,
I think.
Okay. What keeps you teaching? What keeps you kind of jazzed about doing it?
Oh, it's the kids, and it's the amazement, and watching them learn things. And it's a lot of it is I'm trying to get them to learn things that I wish I had learned.
Mm-hmm.
The first few years of me teaching was a lot of reading out of the St. John's Library, mm-hmm. trying to stay ahead of them.
Okay.
Pestering different pastors going, how far into heresy is this book going to lead me? I just want to make sure I don't,
right.
don't do something really wrong here.
Yeah.
No, that one's okay. All right.
Cool.
And then just trying to learn a lot of context around things.
Yeah.
Because one of the big things that I really want to focus on them is there's things in here that you just don't understand because it's been translated and you're missing pieces and you just don't get it the same way somebody back then who would have heard it would get it. So we got to try to teach you those things if we even know those things.
Right, right.
And so, you know, where are the jokes in here? You know, where are
songs?
Yeah,
poems,
songs in
all
here.
All kinds of things.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
and
all
people would have known it, but us reading it back into time, we don't know it unless we kind of learn about it.
Right. You miss context that where everyone else would go, oh, I see what they're referring to here.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids don't have a chance to. So now we get to see, all right, there's something here. We can learn about this. And then we can get through all the stories, know all the things that happen, and then be ready for confirmation class mm-hmm. so I can hand them off to someone like you.
That's right.
To then go ask more challenging questions, to which I get to say, that's above my pay grade.
you've told me at least 2 years in a row now that there's like one or two things that happened last year, the year before that. I remember you telling a story about Marina Aldretti said something in class that like one or two mind benders a year that really are awesome to be a part of. You want to share one of those?
The greatest part about teaching this is when we're doing the Old Testament.
Okay.
And we really run through Genesis and Exodus. Hit those really hard because there's a lot of stuff in there. Skip some of the more salacious bits, but try to keep in some of the stuff that, you know, we'd always tell them, would your parents let you watch a movie that has these kinds of things in
right,
it? No,
right.
But they sent you here.
Right. The Bible's got
you get
in
to
there.
Read about it. But every year we get to a part where Abraham's going to sacrifice Isaac. Mm-hmm. And the kids do a lot of reading. They do almost all the reading in the class. And
so
they go through.
In the text or reading it.
Yeah. They're in there. And, you know, by this point we've been reading quite a bit where, you know, I've gotten into the book. They've kind of, you know, started to get some pronunciation down, or at least they're not tripping over it, even if it's wrong.
Right.
We go through it, and they start reading this story, and you can feel the tension in the room rise because they all know, wait, how old is Isaac? He's about your age. And then, you know, the eyebrows start going up, and the looks start going around the room, and then they keep reading. And they're like, wait, he's got to carry his own wood that his dad's going to kill him on? And the tension and the fear and the terror rises.
Yeah.
Even though I know they've heard this story before, and I know they can read, including those big red headlines that are just one column over that tell you that Isaac survives this. But the tension goes through, and then you stop right before the big climax, right before Abraham goes and gets stopped by the angel, and you go, all right, what kind of father would kill his only son? And every year you get the same mix of answers.
Mm-hmm.
He gets kind of this, a bad one, an idiot, a moron. And then you just wait. And you'll get a lot of the, you know, little things trickling out, and then they kind of look at you like, what else are you looking for here? And then you'll see it on one kid's face. you see the cognitive dissonance set in, and the face twists up, and the eyes kind of cross a little, and you look at him and you go, no, you've got it. You've got it. Say it out loud.
Say what you're thinking. Say what you're thinking.
And they won't do it, and then finally they go, God? Jesus? And then the most entertaining part of the whole year happens, the backpedaling. Did I say moron?
Yeah, and but you help them find themselves in a real story and then wander in to this God in history who then sends a son. And what is that about then? What is cross and resurrection really about? And then you get to hand them off to me.
Yeah, exactly. You get to ask the question, not answer it, and hand it off.
Yeah, yeah. But I think you fundamentally start in that class, the thorough reading of Scripture and the allowing of them to bring them their whole selves to the story, and then the wonder and the questioning that we say is a part of faith, mm-hmm. not separate or apart from faith. I think you're planting some of those early seeds, and I see that you enjoy it.
Oh, I do.
I know it. I know it. So let's talk about some other things going on in your life as well. Sunday school is kicking off this week, September 8th, and all students can register. Just show up and we'll get you registered, and please come be a part of that. Oktoberfest. This is another event that's kind of one you've kind of done some leadership and shared some leadership in. Oktoberfest is kind of interesting in the culture today. I would say, you know, bars and restaurants tend to own Oktoberfest here in America. But it's got a cultural significance, and we're holding it at a church. So what's the purpose of an Oktoberfest at a church, and why are you involved in that?
Well, originally I was asked by Pastor Frank.
Okay.
I think the beard might have had something to do with it.
The beard? You guys have
the beard, the last name. Sounds good. Let's go with it. But we were looking for something, looking for another festival, looking for something that would be, you know, kind of celebrate the German heritage, mm-hmm. because we do a lot with the Scandinavian heritage, but don't really touch on the German heritage of this church right. as much. And we do have quite a few people here with German heritage. We've got a lot of people that are members at the Turnverein, which is where the big Oktoberfest is right. in October in Sacramento. But we were looking for something to kind of have a church gathering to do a celebration, and then also to start turning it into a community outreach, okay. to kind of do it in a way that was visible to the neighborhood, that people could see, okay, this is a place that actually looks like might be some fun. Mm-hmm. Let's go check it out. Yeah. Let's see what's going on.
Right.
And so we started off with a plan, and a lot of people were very excited by it. Pastor Leslie and I worked at the beginning, and we had, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 people that really wanted to help. And
that's a good amount of folks to get it going.
It is, but we planned too big.
Okay.
We aimed for the sun, and we might have hit it.
Okay.
And so we kind of collapsed there the first year, okay. but ended up just backing up going, you know what? We're just going to do a potluck. We're not having a stage. We don't need to figure out, you know, the porta potty situation or building codes or mm-hmm. any of that. We're just going to have a potluck. And we had, I think, about 25 people
okay.
Come that first year. And it was pretty simple. We, you know, brought the grill, grilled some brats. Everyone brought some beer to share. Everyone brought a different dish. And
what's some of the things people would see at the Oktoberfest and to identify it as different from other events?
Oh, well, I mean, we put up a lot of the Bavarian stuff. So mm-hmm. we, you know, got some tablecloths and we got some pennants and flags and kind of
hung some things. You might see some Lederhosen around.
Yep, there is definitely some Lederhosen running yeah. around. There's a few of us that wear it, and we're trying to encourage more.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, go for the full leather or get the goat skin or right. if you're just going to go get the quick knockoff t-shirt that right. has the Lederhosen printed on it.
Right.
It's all good.
If you don't know what that is, go look it up at home.
So, yeah, we've got
music
that. We
too,
do
right?
do some music. We do some German music. The first year we learned that if you do too much Oompa music on Pandora, they don't have that much.
Okay.
And pretty soon you're looking at yourself going, is this Mexican? Because that's where a lot of the Mexican Oompa music comes from,
okay.
is the German bands, the Bavarian bands.
Cool.
So we discovered that one and then had to readjust course.
Okay.
And we've had some people play some instruments. We've had some tuba. We've had some accordion. We do singing every year. It's generally been a lot of fun. Last year we ended up with about 75 people, so it's growing every year.
And we always end up with people that just kind of find us. We have certainly members and participants of St. John's that come, but every year, you know, it's kind of grown to be a moment where people find us and kind of it might be a first kind of connection point that feels less intimidating than stepping into a worship service that you're not familiar with. And the steps of St. John's can be intimidating to walk up into that space. We talk about trying to make that, you know, a lower barrier for folks. But, you know, hearing some German music and seeing people drinking responsibly in a parking lot and having fun together of all ages because there's kids there. To, you know, 80-year-olds sometimes, and we share that together in a fun way, and people kind of are drawn to that.
Yeah, no, it's been interesting watching it. The first year was just St. John's members, and then the next year we got a few, you know, invite some friends, and last year there was quite a few more of that, and more people walked in off the street. This year we're actually inviting Trinity Episcopal Church.
Okay, cool.
Because one of our members, Pear, goes there also. Okay. And so he said, hey, they might enjoy this.
Cool.
Said, all right, bring them on.
Interdenominational, open, kind of welcoming space. So if folks want to join Oktoberfest, you're welcome to come September 21st. It's a Saturday from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. We'll be here. There'll be food and pretzels and music and all kinds of fun stuff. So join us for that.
Yeah, and if you got a chance, go to the events webpage and go to our potluck sign up so we know who's coming and what they're bringing.
Excellent. That makes sure we've got plenty of food for everyone that's coming. So we're talking about it being a busy month for you, but also just know you have a busy life, not only a full-time job where you travel. You could tell folks maybe what you do briefly as well, but you're also involved in Scouts and other things like that. So tell folks, what do you do, and tell us a little about your involvement in Scouts.
So I work for companies that do pharmaceutical manufacturing. So the companies I work for are in clinical trials. We do work for other companies. So there's a lot of small pharma companies that most people have never heard of. They're the ones that are doing most of the research work out there in the world,
okay,
hoping to find something and then typically sell it to a larger pharma company that knows how to do all the marketing and manufacturing on large scale. But what we help them do is figure out, how do I make this for the first time ever on larger scale? How do I turn this into a tablet?
Okay.
And so my job is to go around, mostly around the country. We've got a few overseas clients, and go visit them and find new people and keep the pipeline full. My background was I was a medicinal chemist, so I did the discovery work for a long time before I switched over onto the business side.
Right, right. And so Scouts, how did you get involved in that?
So Scouts, my wife and I are both involved in Scouts. She takes care of the Girl Scout side.
Okay.
She's a leader over there, and I take care of the Boy Scout side.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that works well because you have twins.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, a boy and a girl. So Sam and Emmy, hey, back home.
Hi, guys. So, yeah, so we ended up in we live downtown, but we go to Boy Scouts out in Natomas.
Okay.
Because we had done a lot of things around church with the Burns, and especially the Burns boys and Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent a lot of time together, camping trips, time around church, doing things. And so when we started looking for a Cub Scout pack, Eric mentioned that, hey, I run a Cub Scout pack. You guys come check it out. Come see if it's the right one. And so we had talked to a couple other packs that didn't seem as welcoming, and it was perfect. He had friends already there, and so we joined. He joined kind of late. He was a wee blow by the time he joined, but went through and now moved. And then when he moved on to Boy Scouts, Kate was in charge of the Boy Scouts. And so I've been helping them out with planning and getting everything set for trips, our monthly campouts, making sure we've got sites and any events are all booked and we've got everyone and all their paperwork in place and all the forms.
I know your family enough to know your calendar is planned out because you have to be, because your kids are active and you and your wife have work and are active. And so you're like, what's happening 6 months from now, because we're planned out past that. what's it like of living into being a dad with twins who are teens now and they're in confirmation? And where are some of the joys and kind of the struggles of parenting for you? Oh, you and I have talked about this, by the way. So yeah.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, the joy is just watching them grow into adults, and they can interact so much more now, and they do things on, you know, it's not just surface level anymore. There's other things going on, and then it comes back out, and
your kids are thoughtful and funny humans, each in their own kind of unique way.
That's very nicely put.
I'm sticking by that. I enjoy them.
I enjoy them a lot. And it's very entertaining to watch them as they become adults and they develop their own personalities, but watch where that personality is in relation to other people, especially in the family. Like, how far did they shift from my personality? What did they pull out of mine? What did they pull out of Jenny's? What did they pull out of mine that's really from my father, that's really from my grandfather?
Yeah.
And they're just acting like my grandfather now.
Yeah.
Right. It can be quite entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
It can also be quite challenging to watch.
What are the parts that you feel unprepared for as a dad? Like, is there parts where you go, wow, this area is harder than I thought?
Well, my first response when the doctor came in and said, okay, you get to take them home today, was, who authorized that? I didn't get a manual. I have no training. What?
Right. Aren't you sending someone home with me? Like,
there is no license here.
I want that nurse that I met to come home.
And they'd been very heavily taken care of because they'd been in the NICU for a while. So yeah. Because they were a little early. And so I've always felt unprepared. Although
each chapter along the way brings something new.
I have three younger siblings. One of them's 10 years younger than I am. So I've had some basic training. Right. I've kind of seen, you know, some of the things that that can happen and some more expectations. So, you know, right. I wasn't worried about dropping the babies because I know I've done that before and it's okay. Sorry, Megan. But every time, you know, they get to a new point, I'm not ready for this. I don't know how to handle this. Let's start talking to other parents. And it's actually one of the nice things. One of the things that brought us to St. John's was the extensive families.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of kids and a lot of families, and they were active and they did things here. And so we have friends whose children are older, and I can watch what they're doing.
And ask them. And I've seen you do that.
Find out about things and go, okay, all right. It's not that they're sprain especially broken, it's just normal broken.
Right.
Okay.
And me too, right? And me too in my parenting, that I'm normally broken as well, and figuring it out and trial and error, and that same kind of thing, because of that connection with people that have survived the chapter of life I'm in and can maybe just lend a listening ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's challenging because I'm trying, you know, how much independence is enough independence? They got to be fully functioning adults at 18. That's the theory, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Where do they need to be now? And how do I let go enough? And how do I not overprotect? How do I not underprotect?
Yeah.
I think my wife tends to slide one way and I slide the other. So how do we find that? How do we find that happy middle spot?
Yeah. Yeah. There with you, Matt.
And then, you know, how do I protect them from things, and how do I accept that there's some things that are going to happen to them that are going to be horrible, and it has to happen. They have to learn this. Like the first time they fall in love and their heart gets broken, it's going to happen. It has to happen. It should happen. I can't protect them from that.
But
that's terrifying to watch.
Yeah, man. Well, I watch you and Jenny doing it with integrity and honesty and openness. And I will be asking you questions potentially, but hang in there, because I see you guys doing that and really doing it to the best of your ability. So you said families brought you to St. John's in part. Was there other parts to that story? What got you here?
It really was a lot of the family stuff. When we moved here, we checked out a lot of different churches. We had been going to a Lutheran church in Chicago. We had decided on that one partly because it was close to the house. Okay. We could walk there. We had checked out some other churches. They weren't good fits. But that one, we walked in one week, and I think there were 75 people total in the service. It was pretty packed for that church. And a third of them were pregnant women.
Okay.
We went, oh, this might be a good spot, since I think the kids were new members potentially. Yeah, the kids were small then. Yeah. So it was like, okay, this might be a place where families go.
When you came here, you had kids already.
Yes. Okay. So when we came here, the kids were already four.
Okay.
And so we started looking around for another place that kind of had that feel.
Yeah.
And initially I wasn't going to look at this church. It's too big. It's a downtown church. It's too big.
Right.
That's not what we're looking for. But we had tried a number of different churches. And, you know, there's the church that Jenny grew up in here, and that wasn't the right fit. And there were some churches close to us. We checked out the Presbyterian church, and it was just not right for us. And there was a Methodist church, and it was nice, and it was fun, but they seemed like they were winding down as a congregation. They, you know, maybe had 10 years to go, and then they were going to close the doors.
Yeah.
And so we were looking for things, and finally we came here, and it was pretty quick. The church was pretty open. We were greeted almost immediately by people. People wanted to know where we came from, who we were, very welcoming. And then we started coming on a fairly regular basis. And
then kids are interacting with other kids.
Started doing things with the family group, and ended up on the family campout. Which is where we met a lot of the people that we still hang out with.
Cool. Very cool. So we've talked, I feel like folks have gotten to know you a bit through this podcast, but there's definitely layers to you. When we end worship here every week, we say, you know, live God's love in the world. How do you think you're doing that to the best of your ability through your faith life? Or what does that mean to you to live God's love in the world?
It's interesting because I think it's one of those things I struggle with because I always think I'm not doing it well.
Mm. I don't think you're alone in that.
It's, living downtown, the homeless situation is huge down here.
Yeah.
You can't not see it every day.
Yep.
We sometimes have people sleeping on our porch and you have to fight that battle of, okay, I know you don't have anywhere to sleep, but my kids need to walk outside to go to school now.
Yep.
How do I deal with this in a, in a way where, okay, let's start by, I can go out a different door and just go see if they'll wake up and maybe they'll just kind of get the move on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you give money to people or do you not? This is one of the things that comes out of like, when I'm teaching the kids is, when Jesus talks about, did you clothe me? Did you visit me? Did you feed me? Every person there, every person there is like, okay, am I failing Jesus here?
Yeah.
And it's difficult for me. So, we try to make sure that we keep up with the food pantry here. We try to, go to different events. And that's one of the ways that church really helps, is it gives us a lot of outlets for things like that. But then even outside of that, it's just, being able to do the teaching, being able to
balance all that's in your life.
Yeah. And, Scouts helps too. It's one of those things where you can go out and you can, try to help instill values. I'm going to rely on other parents to help instill values in my kids and help other parents instill values in their kids and make sure that they can kind of see these things. And when they get into these situations where, maybe they make a comment about something and, have you thought about it in a different way and come at it from a more compassionate standpoint?
Yeah. Well, I see you as someone who's trying to do this to the best of their ability, and that I do think living God's love in the world is attention for all of us. So an honor that you're doing it the best you can and that it doesn't have to be perfect. I want to lift up again Sunday school. I think the fifth and sixth graders are in for a treat that are going to have you. They're lucky to have you. So that's this Sunday again, the 8th.
Yep.
The 21st is that Oktoberfest. Come on out 4 to 7 and sign up online for a potluck dish and join us for that. Scott, it's been fun kind of letting your story be revealed here. I enjoy you. We've played cards together and other things. So our families have fun. So I appreciate you and thanks for the time, man.
No, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You bet.